Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people hate to love and love to hate. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And we're headed back to Runway Magazine.
Oh my gosh. 20 years in the making.
20 years in the making. And we're back to the Devil Wears Prada, too. Were you a big Devil Wears Prada fan?
I was thinking about this. Out? Like, obviously, I've seen it a bunch.
Yes.
But it wasn't, like, ever, like, a favorite or, like, you know, it was like, yeah, it was like, okay, you know.
I don't think I saw this movie in theaters when it came out.
Because
in 2006, like I would have been.
Yeah, where were you?
What, like in, like about to start high school maybe? Or what time of year did it come out? It came out in the summer. So yeah, so I guess it would have been like right before I started high school.
Yeah.
And my dad was definitely not going to see The Devil Wears Prada. And I feel like it was not a like a movie that my family would have chosen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I rented the DVD from like the library or something at some point. Mm. And then did really like it. I have seen it numerous times. And obviously I love Anne Hathaway. So this was part of that as well. Part of my like, oh, I'm obsessed with Anne Hathaway, but like in a straight way, I definitely
love her. She's you just respect
so
her. Yeah.
So I was definitely watching The Devil Wears Prada in high school. And yeah, I mean, I do think it is one of the best Anne Hathaway movies, even though I will say the original Devil Wears Prada, she is the most boring part of it. Like, when watching the movie, the scenes with Meryl Streep and the scenes with Emily Blunt, like, pop off the screen. And then the sequences where it's, like, her and her friend or her and Adrian Grenier or whatever his name is, the guy from Entourage, or her and Simon Baker in Paris, those are all kind of like, whatever.
I mean, that's kind of the point. Like, she's right, the everyman. Yes, she's the... Right. The in for us norms watching.
Yes.
And I do think it is her stronger performance, generally. It's an intentional sort of doe-eyed.
Yes.
Insecure kind of what's happening around me type.
Well, and she is a little bit like restrained, which she's not. She doesn't do a ton in movies. So it is interesting to watch her in that vein where she's kind of like the straight person rather than something that's a bit more
Bride Wars.
As she is in Mother Mary, where she's crying the entire time, throwing herself on the ground.
Yeah. No, I definitely think this had an impact. Like, I remember loving the fashion montage, like the soundtrack. Like, I definitely remember it. And then as we grew up, of course, the discourse around it remained prevalent. I feel like we like all had the realization like, oh, her boyfriend is the villain. And that was a whole thing in that like BuzzFeed era of like 2016 when we're like, oh my God, actually.
So I was thinking about this with The Devil Wears Prada 2 of like, I think part of the reason why The Devil Wears Prada is so successful, like, I mean, it made a decent amount of money at the box office, so obviously it did well then. But, like, it ran on cable constantly. I feel like I've seen pieces of The Devil Wears Prada, like, hundreds of times on cable over the years. And also, back in 2006, we were still in the, like, movie rental era, like the original Netflix, I think, where you were shipping the DVDs and forth, were like was still big. So I think people like rewatched The Devil Wears Prada a ton, which is why everybody knows all of these like sort of slightly arcane like one-liners and iconic things where they're like, oh, like remember the boots when she walks in the office that one time? It's like that's such a small piece of the movie, but like anybody who is a fan of Devil Wears Prada like knows all of these references. And I was just thinking about movies today of like Barbie, for example, which was obviously a giant thing. Like, do we think that people in 10 years are going to be able to like quote Barbie in the same way as the Devil Wears Prada. Cause I just don't know like how, like, I guess, I mean, I'm sure you can rewatch things on streaming all the time, but like you have to go to it and pick it. It's not like it sort of comes to you and there's always new things that are being advertised to you. I'm just wondering about like
media's the like rewatch changed.
Culture. Like, do people have the same like reverence for things that they did back in the early 2000s? Do you have thoughts on this?
I think it's like you can make the same argument about like comparing Michael Jackson to like Taylor Swift. Like, the industry has changed so much that like the cultural response to things changes too. So I think that, yeah, it's harder to have a joint sort of zeitgeist bookmark, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know if it's like, oh, I don't know which is like the thing that's lost, right? Like, have we just, there's too much being made now and there's not like a sort of, yeah, singular place you can go to like everyone on Thursday night is watching the same movie that happens to be showing on ABC, you know?
Right.
And now everyone can just choose whatever they want and all of that. That being said, obviously some things do have like a cultural footprint, and a big movie like Barbie, I can see lasting in a lot of ways, but yeah, it's hard to picture like recapturing the sort of quotability and memification of something that we had in a different era of media, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
'Cause, yeah, it's like even comparing The Devil Wears Prada to The Devil Wears Prada 2, like the quotability isn't there. And is that a script problem, or is it just like, we were forced to ingest The Devil Wears Prada in such a different, like, constant way. Whereas now it's like, you see it, you talk about it, you move on.
Yeah, because I think about the quotability of movies, and, like, I don't necessarily know that all of these lines in, you know, The Princess Diaries or Shrek or whatever, like, are incredibly well-written lines. Right. Or if it's just, like, I've heard them so many times that they're quotable to me.
Yeah.
And with The Devil Wears Prada 2, it's like, yeah, if I had to watch that 30 times, I would also be quoting things from that movie.
Yes.
Where it's movies that I've seen, like, Challengers or whatever, which I've seen 3 times, which is a lot, I feel like, for a recent movie. Like, there are things in that I can kind of quote, or like, I know the scenes, but it's not quite as entrenched in me. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe if I, you know, saw it more often. Because, for example, one of my favorite movie lines to quote from the most recent years is Fade Rotha. He's psychotic, which I feel like I only picked up the second time I was watching Dune Part 2. And then I was like, oh, wait, this line's so funny. But like, is it funny on a first watch? I don't know. But it's funny on a second watch.
Yeah.
So I think quotability sort of like builds up over time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I think our what's that called? Our mental ability to remember things. The interest we have in
frontal lobe. Back lobe.
Anyways, we have an attention deficit.
Attention deficit.
Yeah, yes. And so I don't know how that will look in another 20 years, you know?
Yes.
Because, yeah, I do think, whether that's our bias as millennials or not, there is like a certain era of the 2000s, early 2010s, where things, we were united. We were united around certain truths. And that was the joy of movies then. And I think that's why The Devil Wears Prada, I mean, that era of like the rom-com and the chick flick type of thing has been impossible to replicate since.
Right.
And I can't begin to figure out why, but it does seem like it just was able to capture sort of the, it was able to bridge like worlds in ways where now we're so hyper aware of like who's supporting what do people like? Like, even thinking of The Devil Wears Prada, like that was a movie that was like blacklisted from the fashion world. Like it was very anti-establishment at the time. Like Anna Wintour was not happy this movie was being made and refused to let them film in various like situations where Vogue would have been. Like they didn't film the on the steps of the Met. They didn't have access to the fashion closets, and they were making it sort of in spite of the people they were talking about not wanting it being made. And so it was able to like exist as sort of this testament, like this, wow, fashion is so cool and beautiful, and isn't this movie luscious to look at, while also being like, we're the underdog and we're kind of sticking it to the man and we're getting away with something here. And OMG, can you believe this is the inner workings of this world that looks so polished and pretty, but it's actually like cutthroat and nasty. And so it was like, it's kind of like edgy, but like also very palatable. Whereas nowadays, The Devil Wears Prada 2 is like, part of the reason people were wary of it is because it is so like entrenched in the establishment. Like it's like everyone's having their like Devil Wears Prada 2, like.
Oh, well, Anna Wintour is on the cover Anna Wintour- with.
Yeah, what's that about? Exactly. And it's like everyone's like, all the labels want in on it, all the fashion houses want in on it, everybody wants to be in the movie, everyone's in the movie, like all the name dropping. It's just like a different beast where now it's like lost its edge in some ways, like in that specific like fashion forward way, where it's like, no, this is very much part of the establishment, and people are like, you know, where it's the same thing that happened with Wicked, where it's like everyone's having their collab and it's like corporate synergy galore, and Lancome is like, yeah, get in here, girls. Like, and so it's interesting, like how if a movie can have the same impact if it's not, you know, against something.
Yeah, well, it's hard to register the impact of The Devil Wears Prada over a 20-year span versus the impact of The Devil Wears Prada 2, you know, to date. Yeah. I do think that, like, these quote-unquote chick flicks, on one hand, yes, we're getting less of them, but I also feel like a lot of the big cultural movie moments of the last couple of years, like Wicked, Barbie, The Devil Wears Prada, like, have been these very, like, female-forward movies, because as a branding exercise, there's so many different avenues you can take to come into that, where like obviously Marvel and some of these other things are big as well, but I think that, you know, it's like you're not gonna do a Revlon collab for Oppenheimer, you know, it's like what are
Supreme and Accutane,
where even the Blake Lively movie with the Grab Your Florals or whatever, like, was trying to do something, and that did make a lot of money, I think, because of, like, and even Wuthering Heights this year of, okay, like, this is the movie, like, for this couple of months that if you are, like, a girl who's kind of a little media savvy and wants to be in on things, like, this is the movie that you have to take your boyfriend to, or, like, go with your girlfriends. And I do think that The Devil Wears Prada 2, like, is hitting on all of that. I think the question for a movie like this is sort of staying power. Like, even if you think about Wicked, like, okay, to what degree are people now referencing the Wicked movie? I mean, I guess Wicked is a little bit different because it's based on this musical. So, you know, like, people are constantly referencing Wicked, but it's like, is it the movie? Is it the musical? Which piece of it is it? Slightly unclear. But yeah, I guess, like, to use Barbie as an example, how much are people thinking about Barbie currently, you know, 3 years after it came out, or 2 years after it came out, or however long ago that was? It's interesting. Okay, so Devil Wears Prada 2, what were your thoughts going into it? Did you think it was going to be good? Did you think it was going to be bad? What were your expectations? And then did they live up? Did the movie live up to your expectations? What did you think about it after seeing it?
Thank you for the question. Yeah. My expectations were low. I think legacy sequels are pretty, they feel kind of cash grabby and empty.
And the trailer was so bad.
trailer I didn't even watch. It's just like, okay. Heinous. There's just like so many self-referential nods, and the whole idea is like sticky and whatever. I honestly got the ick, like seeing some of the behind the scenes, like, or not behind the scenes, like the from set, like, you know, because a lot of this, not leaked, but like they were shooting in New York. So you got a lot of footage of Anne Hathaway like falling on the steps or dancing through the
street. Eating the bagel. Yes.
And I was like, oh, like something about it, like really just like, I think that the idea of everyone being so excited about it, like crowds gathering to watch this movie be made, sort of added to this idea of it just being this soulless fan service-y sort of thing. So yeah, my expectations were low, and then I heard generally good things, so I was excited. And you know, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't necessarily love the movie. I feel like it was good for what it was. It was a lot better than I worried it would be. But I was also kind of like annoyed by a lot of it. And it felt like it hit a lot of the same beats. I mean, that's the problem with most sequels, is you do end up kind of bastardizing your own inspo. So I don't know. I mean, I know you really liked it.
I did really like it. Yeah. I also was going into it with low expectations. I feel like we've gotten a lot of these legacy sequels in recent years.
Yeah.
And while a couple of, I guess, the horror ones have been okay, you get a lot of like Freakier Friday.
Yeah.
Which just feels like a perfectly fine movie, but like so forgettable and nobody really cares about it. And so and especially with the trailer for this being as bad as it was, I was really concerned. I think the thing that I liked about this movie is that it feels to me like it has a point of view. It has something that it's trying to say. And I think also as someone who's like working in journalism in New York, who was recently laid off, like it hit very close to home for me. And yeah, like the state of journalism is really bad right now for a whole bunch of different reasons. And whereas the first one 20 years ago, like I think that the version of journalism that it was sort of based on wasn't exactly as strong as the movie depicts it in 2006. But like, yeah, it was an industry with all of these titans where you could sort of like punch up at Anna Wintour and be like, why are you so like nasty to all of these people? Like, why are you such a bad boss? Where by the time we've got to 2026, it's like, oh, actually, the only reason why Vogue exists as a brand and why any of these people have jobs is because of Anna Wintour as like a figure. If when she leaves Vogue, like no offense to Chloe Mall, but I'm like, that woman just does not sort of have the gravitas, I think, to like keep the brand afloat in the same way. And so it does kind of make you ask a bunch of questions of like, okay, how, like what is the state of this? How do we operate moving forward? Like, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Because on one hand, Anna Wintour is sort of a bad person, but on the other hand, like, if you compare her to Elon Musk, is she a bad person? Like, it's hard to say. And the movie does deal a lot with that. It's basically a copy paste of the Jeff Bezos situation, which is interesting because the Met Gala is sponsored by Amazon this year, which very like incongruous. But the villain of The Devil Wears Prada 2 is a Jeff Bezos like figure. The hero of The Devil Wears Prada 2 is Jeff Bezos' ex-wife-like figure, and Emily sort of becomes the Lauren Sanchez of the in-world Bezos-verse. So, yeah, I liked it because I felt like it was surprising to me and more poignant and relevant than I thought it was going to be, and that any sort of big studio film has any right to be in a lot of ways. But I do get sort of like the criticisms that people have about it, and yeah, the Amazon of it all is very interesting, I think.
I mean I think that's like honestly my annoyance in the film was they really like declawed Miranda Priestley. Like, yes. Yeah, she still gets her funny zingers and she still gets her one-liners. But by the end of it, it's very much like, nobody's perfect. And like, I was like, what? Like, I feel like the first film did a better job of like allowing nuance for a character where you like respect her, but you're also like, you're a bad person. Whereas this was very much like, oh, why won't they just let her be? Why won't they just let her be a little mean?
Because there's that scene at the end where she's in the car with Anne Hathaway and she's sort of like, you know, and I didn't spend enough time with my kids, but I love my job. And the job is like, somebody's got to do it and it's important. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, and some people just aren't going to spend time with their kids because, you know, they got to do this important work of showing people what clothes to wear. And it's like, well, like,
I don't know if that's the takeaway
that we necessarily need to be having.
Yeah. And like the whole, like, it was very, like, honestly, it was really just that like arc of Miranda Priestley being like, oh, Stanley Tucci wants a job. Like, I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, it annoyed me that they wanted to like water her down to like such a friendly little misunderstood grandma type. And I think a lot of that comes with the Andy Sachs character still being this like starry-eyed, nervous wreck.
Yes.
Who really had too much screen time or something. Like, Anne Hathaway in this movie was unpalatable for me personally. Really? I found her, once they were in Milan especially, and she was getting all involved in like stirring the pot and doing nothing productive, I was like, girl, you need to take a Xanax and sit down for 5 minutes, please. Like, just calm down, because this isn't like your fight per se. And I know why they had to do it that way. Like, they had to give her something to do. But like the entire storyline of like, oh, she's going to work with Emily, but it's a secret for some reason. But then they're like, we have to tell her. And then it's like, well, why did I have to tell her when I'm the one who's going to steal her magazine? Like, that was very convoluted and weird to me and felt very much just to push this like mushy kind of female friendship story where it didn't need to be for me.
Yeah, because the basic premise of the movie, I guess, is that Andy gets fired from her job, gets as like a regular news journalist, and gets hired at Runway to sort of help Miranda with a PR crisis. And then while she's there, the head of Elias Clark, the Condé Nast-esque parent company that is over Runway, dies, and his son takes over, who's very like pro McKinsey and AI and whatever. And so it becomes clear that Vogue is going to sort of like a Runway is going to get stripped apart if somebody doesn't do anything. And so Andy and Emily decide, oh, we're going to pitch the idea to Emily's Jeff Bezos-esque boyfriend to buy Runway, and we'll let Miranda run it and it'll be great. And then as it turns out, oh, Emily wants the Jeff Bezos boyfriend, played by Justin Theroux, to buy it so that she can be the editor-in-chief and they can get rid of Miranda. And so then Andy and Miranda have to go behind Emily's back to get Jeff Bezos' ex-wife to instead buy all of Elias Clark and keep Miranda in power. But at the end of the movie, it sort of makes it clear this is just like a Band-Aid. Like, sure, we have like a nicer billionaire rather than a shitty billionaire who owns us, but it's like the whole industry is surviving just based on like the whims of people who have a lot of money, not based on anything more substantial than that. And if at any point the Lucy Liu character decides that she wants to change something, or she wants to get rid of something, or she wants to sell something, like, she can do whatever she wants. Anna really has no power. But yeah, some of the hijinks of it were a bit like convoluted so that they could have these reveals. And it sort of feels like, you know what the reveals are going to be anyways, or at least maybe I knew what the reveals were going to be, because the, like, if you had followed the sort of rumors going around that supposedly Jeff Bezos or Lauren Sanchez wanted Jeff Bezos to buy Vogue so that she could be involved with running it somehow or another. And that's partially why she was on the cover of Vogue for the wedding, and also why they're involved with the Met Gala. It's like, oh, okay. So yeah, that's like what they're copying here with the script.
Yeah.
But I didn't think Anne Hathaway was bad. I mean, she was kind of, I don't know.
No, like her character annoyed me. No, I was like,
she's kind of boring. Honestly, the thing that I was most stressed out about her was, I was like, girl, this job clearly is not like a long-term solution. Why are you renting this super expensive apartment?
And like, you gotta
stay in the cheap apartment, because otherwise, like, even though you're dating this developer who I guess has money and like maybe got you a deal on this place, I'm like, this is not certain. As someone who is probably going to have to move out of their current apartment, I'm like, and do not go too big. Like, you will regret this very quickly. And that's partially, I think, why she has to try to pull
all these. Didn't like the apartment.
She didn't even like it, but she likes the guy. And I think that's part of the reason why she feels so invested in fixing all of this, though. Like, oh, she's like, I've got to have money for this apartment that I just decided to rent. So I can't lose my job.
Yeah. But then it was like, why so secrety? Like, what do you mean? Why are you hiding this from Stanley Tucci? Why are you hiding this from, like, what? Like, it just felt so childish, the way she was behaving in the second act, that I was kind of like, just chill out for a second, please.
I don't know why they had to keep it a secret from Miranda that they were trying to get the Jeff Bezos guy to buy the company. Yeah. I mean, and obviously, Emily didn't want that getting out because she wanted it for herself.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
It was confusing a bit.
Yeah. It was just like, I was trying not to like overthink my feelings during the film, but I appreciated the swing. Like, I appreciated that they actually like put thought into what would a magazine nowadays be struggling with. And I think they did a good job of capturing that sort of, like you were talking about, like the dying field and these like machinations of, you know, billionaires and PE firms running the show, even though they have no real stake in the game. And they're wearing, like, I like BJ Novak being like this bro in athleisure who's struggling to say people instead of just guys. And so there was like a lot of details that I appreciated, and like it showed that they actually did care about this script. But I do feel they're, that whoever involved, be it all of them, be it just the writers, be it the director, they did get a little blinded by their love of this, what they call the core four, and needing to get them all their like happy endings of like, it just got a little too cutesy by the end once Miranda Priestly like gives up her speech to Stanley Tucci, and it all was just a miscommunication all along because he hadn't asked for what he wanted. And oh, she also knew that Andy Sachs was maybe going to write a book about her, and she'll tell her to do it because she's supporting the gals. And I don't know. I just feel like there could have been a little bit of a bite still to it. And instead they chose like a very cheery, like sweet, happily ever after kind of angle.
Well, they're definitely setting up a third one. Like, I don't think that's been announced or that that's been written or anything, but like, I think that there was a version where this movie ended with sort of Miranda leaving Runway or, you know, passing the torch. And the fact that that did not happen to me is like, okay, so then that's the third movie. Like, we have a third movie, like, ready to go. And yeah, I understand what you're saying, because like, if Stanley Tucci has been working with her for, you know, 20 years or however long it is, like, you can't tell me that she just accidentally like never really noticed what he wanted or that he didn't have any aspirations. And it feels strange that like, of all the downsizing that theoretically gone on at Runway over the years, that she has kept him, but then won't like let him do anything else. And I also, the scene I didn't like was the one where Emily and Andy get like brunch afterwards or whatever, or they get they share the fries.
Yeah.
Cause that felt unrealistic to me that they would be friends. Like, I'm like, this woman's tried to screw you over now multiple times. Like, I understand that we're going to want her for the fourth movie, but like, I think she can just be a villain again. Like,
not the villain. I refuse that. This whole movie, I was like, Emily Blunt is the best character here. And she's been like, okay, yeah, dating the billionaire was probably a shallow choice, but she handled it with aplomb, you know, like she knew what she needed from that and she kept it at arm's length.
Wow. Like that's the thing. She's the person who like leaves media.
She was iced out of Runway. Like that's, you don't believe her?
Well, I'm like, but theoretically there were other publications that she could go work for and said there's she worked for Dior.
But how was that a sellout to become, like, it's still in the fashion industry. Like, what do you mean? That's a huge job. Is that really that, like, lowbrow? I mean, she's running. She has Runway in her clutches.
I guess. I don't know.
And she was just, like an assistant. Like, you know, she wasn't, like, a designer or a writer.
I guess, like, fashion journalism is maybe slightly different from entertainment journalism. But there are people who are, like, journalists, and then at a certain point they go to work for, like, one of the studios doing PR. And it does feel...
Right, she's never a journalist.
Right, she was an assistant to her. So I guess, I don't know. Maybe she didn't have aspirations of, like, writing or whatever. It's confusing to me exactly how that part of that industry works. But I think there is something like a little bit sellout-y to go from like a...
That's disrespectful.
To go from a position where you are... where you're taking this and you're like monetizing it rather than, I don't know, be...
No. But that's like glamorizing the idea. That's like putting a morality on something like Runway, where it's like, okay, you're a magazine, you're creating something, but like you too are part of a machine of capitalism, you know? So it's like,
I guess maybe I'm thinking too much about myself and like entertainment stuff. Cause I feel like with movies and television, not that obviously that's the most important thing in the world, but like as a journalist, as an entertainment journalist, like I watch all of these things. I am like promoting the stories that matter. I'm trying to like get people to watch things or whatever, to like celebrate the art and the mission and voice and ideas that are in these different pieces of artwork. Yeah. And when you work on the studio side of things, it's like, okay, whatever random movies your studio decided to make, you have to promote and say are great. It doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. Like, I have friends who work in PR for, you know, whatever. And sometimes it's like, you can tell me that this is a bad movie. Like, I know that you're not supposed to because of your job, but like, I'm not going to tell you. Like, you don't have to maintain this cover at all times that all 8 of the movies that your studio has coming out this year are actually the 8 greatest movies that have ever been made. Like you're lying to me about the quality of these in an effort to sell them.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing with fashion, not that it's unimportant, but it's like, and I'm sure that there are fashion things that do have some sort of like message component, but it's at the end of the day more about like beauty. So it's
I think you forgot she wasn't like a journalist. Right. Like she was on the design side. So it makes sense.
Andy's the journalist.
Yeah. So I honestly, what was more flummoxing is like, wait, what is her job at Dior and why is she running this meeting about vendor deals? But okay, that's great. Happy to see the core four together again.
She's also in charge of construction. Like, the thing that was curious.
I was so like,
she's
okay.
Marketing, but she's also then like in charge of our artistic design of this, of the Dior shop. Yeah. Which, by the way, that Dior store is the actual new real Dior store. So Dior must have paid them a crap ton of money to be included in this film.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, no, I think Emily's character remains a favorite. She's having the most fun. I mean, obviously Miranda is like iconic, and before they took her teeth out in the third act, I was enjoying her sort of like bumbling through this new world of like her assistants telling her what she can and can't say. Mm-hmm. She has great charisma in this role and is really able to like disappear into it as far as Meryl Streep can. And so all of that was great. And Emily was allowed to have some like fun making fun of Jeff Bezos' character, who's played by a zany Justin Theroux.
Yes.
Did they like make shorter for this, or am I like, I don't know
what they did to him, but they did something to his face. Because supposedly he was like fat, and then he like lost weight, because there's those Photoshop pictures of them early on. So I don't know what was happening, but he
something was, physical. Was...
When he had the line, when they were talking about Kendall Jenner, and he had the line of like, I can't believe there's someone named Candle. I was like, oh, this is great. This is great writing. Like, thank you for this line.
Yeah. And I think in the end, it did feel a little more hollow than maybe other people felt. And that's okay. I'm glad it was I see all your points. Like, I'm glad. I don't think this was a bad movie, but it wasn't necessarily scratching any itch I had. And in the end, I was just kind of like, bothered by most of their choices,
because it sort of left behind all of the critiques of the first movie.
Yeah,
and we're like, those actually don't matter anymore. Yeah. We're in a state of emergency, so who cares if Miranda's a bitch?
Yeah, exactly.
This is what we have to put up
and
with.
And I wish Andy had like, I think what it was is like, Andy has still no real. She's just kind of like is swayed, and I wish she'd made the choice to go ahead with the book. Like, I think that would have been important to just be like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. But she just has this, like, I don't know what it is. Like, there's something really simple about her.
She wants to have her morals. But then she's so easily swayed by, like, the allure of runway. That if anybody gives her, like, the semblance of approval, she's like, okay, fine. Like, I'll just do this. I'll go along with you guys. And
or it's like, she's definitely someone who, if it came out that, Stanley Tucci's character was actually like a sexual harasser, she'd be like, no, he's only ever been nice to me.
Right. Yeah. Like,
she has no real POV on these people. She doesn't keep a perspective. I mean, and so I think it was like annoying. So
easily like wiped Sway. Out by Emily dragged on this plot line that feels like, well, okay, why would this woman at Dior all of a sudden be so excited about helping you with there has to be an ulterior motive, but she's like, we all just want to keep this brand for Miranda. Like, that's what we're all trying to help Miranda, who we love so much, who's always been so kind to us.
It's so dumb. So I wish there'd been like, I wish she'd been given, because, you know, she's been working 20 years, supposedly traveling the world, doing important journalism, whatever that means. So supposedly, whoever, like, sort of hellscape she's been working with.
Yeah.
She should be more jaded or like not as naive, you know, like more coming in knowing, people can present nice, people can be sympathetic, but they can also be assholes and they can also be monsters. And like, I wish honestly that the sticking point hadn't been, but Miranda will be out of a job and herself. But I wish it had been more like she'd gotten to know like the lower staff and is like, this is a whole machine and we can't just let it disappear overnight.
Yeah. Which she kind of does, because, like, in her dealings with the various assistants, but, like, not really.
Yeah.
I thought that one of my favorite scenes in the movie is the, like, McKinsey meeting in the cafeteria that Miranda has to go to. Because I was like, this is so accurate. It's scarily accurate to dealing with these people. Because, one, these parent companies own a bunch of different magazines. So even if the person at the top like is interested in one of those worlds, like, you're not going to be an expert in like cars and fashion and lifestyle and entertainment and health, like all of these different things. And each of those worlds operates in its own way. Mm-hmm. So each of those outlets operates in their own way. But so not only do you have people who theoretically could be well-intentioned, but just like not know that much about the subject that you're covering. But then also you get all of these business people who come in who are like, oh, well, because I know a lot about business, I know a lot about how to run this outlet. And it's like, well, actually, no, you don't, because running a magazine is completely different than running a regular or, you know, some other type of business. I assume running all different kinds of businesses are different. Like, if you haven't run a bridal shop, you probably can't just come in and run one. You know, like, you need to know the industry, but then also you need to know the topics. And working in journalism is constantly getting these, like, directives from on high from these people who don't know anything of like, oh, well, we need to be doing more of this or less of this or stop doing this or or start doing the other thing. And a lot of times it just has to do with their weird obsessions. Like, we would we would have people be like, oh, well, we need to be doing more coverage on Top Chef. And it's like, okay, well, why? Like, do you think that we'll do well? Well, I like Top Chef. It's like, okay, well, that, if just because Top Chef is the one show that you watch does not mean that we need to start doing a bunch more coverage on Top Chef, or just because you don't watch Survivor doesn't mean that we need to stop doing Survivor. Like, it's, it's like there's other people in the world, and especially with fashion, it's like none of you guys know anything about fashion. So why would you try to, like, quote unquote, fix this brand that's been operating well for a long time, although they probably are going over a budget.
Yeah, I think that in the end it did just feel like a promo piece for Vogue and the Anna Wintour of it all, whereas the first one was very much like, this shit sucks, you know, like, this is a horrible place to work. And so it's kind of interesting, like, dancing on that line of like, you do have the relationships now, so that gives you more influence in some ways. And like, but the fact that Meryl Streep like called Anna Wintour to say, no, the script makes you look so good, honey, like, don't be scared. It's like, okay, we aren't having the same sort of bite to it.
Yeah, I sort of like, I understand that they need the fashion world to kind of buy into this. And also, like, in the 20 years since The Devil Wears Prada came out, a lot of people have gotten into the fashion world because they love the movie The Devil Wears Prada. So they're sort of like, it's not that they're like, oh, Anna Wintour is a bad person. They're sort of like, oh my gosh, like, I love that movie so much, I want to work for her anyways, even though she's kind of a bad person. But it is odd the amount of like synergy there's been between the two that I don't necessarily, I mean, I guess it's kind of helpful for the film, but also I think that the movie would have done just as well if the sort of stories going around were like, oh, and Anna Wintour hates this movie. She's like forbidding people to see it. She says it's awful. And then all of the other fashion outlets are like, oh, this is so interesting. Like, let's, you know, watch or whatever.
Yeah. But it was like, I honestly, I feel like the last cutesy bit kind of took it out for me of like, well, maybe this is the good billionaire and we're all getting along and everyone's happy. I was like, okay. Because the last
But I do
one,
think, but I do think it ends with saying like,
well, but sort of there's all the vagueness. But it is like girl powery.
Mom Andy is like, yay, we fixed all of our problems. And Miranda's like, no, 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 no. Like, we fixed something momentarily. This, like, this is not the end of this. There will be a third movie in which I will return yet again.
But Lady Gaga was a great cameo.
That was so funny.
Yeah, so good. Great song, great costumes. Simone Ashley from Bridgerton looked great as the new Emily.
And was very fun.
I didn't like who's the influencer?
Caleb Herron. He was not given that much to do.
He wasn't, and it was like a great actor. He didn't have funny lines.
Stunt casting. It's like we needed somebody funnier for that role. I mean, I do like him lot as like a comedian and as an influencer. I don't know if he's done any other acting, really. I don't think so. Oh, he was apparently in Jurassic World Dominion, which we did see. He was also just in Pizza Movie. And he's been in a lot of TV show episodes over the years, although I think in like smaller roles. But
I don't know. He just wasn't like serving anything.
Yes. I feel like they could have, like, if you would have gotten like Benny Drama in that role, it would have, like, he would have had more to do. I did like Helen J. Shen as the, as Andy's assistant. I thought she was cute.
Yeah. And I liked the love interest. Actually, you know where Andy pissed me off was when she got so pissy during that like fight they had.
Yeah,
she was like rolling her eyes. I was like, girl, you're what, 45 years old? Like, please learn how to have a conversation.
And she and he was so lovely. He was like, so such nice. A lovely boyfriend.
Yeah. And she's like, well, this has been a productive conversation.
Did you see that that originally she's supposed to have a roommate played by Conrad Riccamora, and then that they cut all of his scenes so that she lives by herself before she gets the new apartment? But originally, she was supposed to have a roommate. That
would make more sense. Yeah. I was honestly like, here we go, another New York apartment.
I was like, how much money is she making at the whatever?
Yeah. No, it was generally good. I mean, the like sad book agent being like, please take this deal for me. That was great. I like that her old friend is still in it. So yeah, they did a good job. I think I did have a little bit of an eye roll towards the end.
Did you like the chicken shop date cameo? Where she goes, it's called chicken shop date.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The unseen Hugh Jackman nod to, great stuff.
Or when she interrupts the lunch with Donatella Versace.
Yeah.
Also a fun one. I really did enjoy this movie. I think it's way better than I thought it was going to be. I am excited for a third one. I don't know if they're going to be able to land the plane well. Like, I kind of feel like that they've gotten lucky twice in a row that it's been as good as it was. But
I don't want a third one. I don't know where they can take it.
I mean, the third one will definitely be about like Miranda leaving.
Yeah, and, but then it's like, okay.
And how they handle that.
Yeah.
I think the question is sort of, in my mind, like, is that something that they are going to do, that they're going to try to do soon? Or are they going to wait until Anna Wintour leaves and then kind of base it on that?
Get some feedback. Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, the movie reminded me how much I love Emily Blunt in a comedy, and I think she should go back to that.
I know. I was thinking about her while she was doing all of her press for this. Like, you used to be an incredible actress who was in so many great projects, and I feel like you have been John Krasinski-ified into this, like, bad B-listy studio film person. And it's like, she just hasn't really been in anything good.
I mean, but even in a while, peak, like, she was like B-list. She wasn't like in a lot.
No, but she was in like more like interesting artsy movies, kind of, you know? And she was in stuff like Edge of Tomorrow is like such a good role for her, or like Sicario. But then it's like, in the past couple of years, it's been A Quiet Place, Mary Poppins Returns, Jungle Cruise, Hustlers, which was a terrible Netflix movie, The Fall Guy, The Smashing Machine. Like, all of those just have like a corporate, like, I'm sure she is making good money being in all of these movies. But I'm like, please, for the love of God, put her in something that's actually good. Because even in Oppenheimer, she's like the worst part.
Oh, I forgot. No, I want her in a comedy, and I want her to do some ad-lib zingers. Because she was just a breath of fresh air in this movie, as she was in the first. And she's funny. May the bridges I burn light my way.
Light my way. The best line of the movie, which I will be quoting, is when Miranda goes, "You're not a visionary, you're a vendor." I was like, oh, 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 get her, girl, get her.
Yeah.
So yeah. True. So many people want to be visionaries and so many people are vendors instead. And, yeah. You know, it's hard. It's hard to be visionary like you and I.
Exactly. We're
iconic.
Yeah.
Somebody the other day asked me, have you ever thought about starting a podcast? And I said, girl, I've had a podcast for longer than you've been alive. Like, I have had a podcast, let me tell you.
Gosh, who said that to your face?
It was like a good friend's boyfriend.
We've got to get our business cards set.
I know. I'm like, we got to start clipping is unfortunately what we have to do in our spare time, which I'm like, kill me. We need to record on video.
No.
I need to not be wearing my glasses whenever we're recording episodes. And then we're going to have to meticulously go through and pull out our funniest bits, which could be hard to find.
Yeah. Well, when the whole episode is good, it's like, what's the point of clips? Okay, well,
let's just put the whole episode up on YouTube. Call it a day. Get those 12 views, baby.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I'm excited to talk about Sheep Detective next week.
Oh, honestly, yes.
One of my most looked forward to.
Wait to see Sheep Detectives. I'm locked
in. You're
going
to be eating your words when I said I was looking forward to that.
Although I'm seeing Sheep Detectives on Monday, so we're going to have to figure out the the scheduling issues there. But Sheep Detectives, yes, so exciting. Yeah. And then don't worry, we have 3 more Anne Hathaway movies all coming out this year. So,
and you know what? They're getting progressively worse.
So you think, I'm like, we are ending in Verity, so we will definitely get to the worst one. Do you think that The Odyssey will be better or worse than The Devil Wears Prada 2?
Oh, than Devil Wears Prada 2.
Well, you love Mother Mary, so I feel like it's going to be hard for something to pass that for you.
I haven't even seen the trailer for The Odyssey. It seems like bro-y, but maybe it'll be good. I feel like it'll be better just as an art form than Devil Wears Prada 2, but will I enjoy it more? I don't know. Depends how long
it is. I don't know if they're going to make it gay or not. I mean, it's Matt Damon, so unclear. But because I'm like, all of these, like the whole thing about the Georgian War and like the ancient Greeks and whatever was that they were all just like going off and meeting up with each other because they were trapped on a boat with all these men for forever.
You're sign me up.
I'm like, actually, no, because none of these people are showering and we're all just going to be rowing all day.
Yeah. Ugh.
Kill me. But if I'm going to be gay with a bunch of people, I'd rather be gay in a Stanley Tucci way than gay in a... Which, I'm like,
unverified.
Stanley Tucci never has a love interest in this
movie.
I assume Nigel's gay, but like, we don't... Has that been
documented?
It's
unverified. No.
Unverified?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the plot of The Devil Wears Prada 3.
He's finally coming out.
A wedding. We haven't had a wedding yet, have we?
No.
No, I don't think we have. A Devil Wears Prada wedding I would love. Okay. Yeah. So we have a wedding. Miranda's retiring.
Kenneth Branagh is doing something.
Kenneth Branagh is back as was he in the original? I don't think so either.
He was just like never addressed, but giving his inspirational speech to sad, sad Miranda.
This movie has made a lot of money. Here's a question for you before we wrap up.
Okay.
Do we think this will get any sort of Oscar nominations? Because the first one, Meryl Streep got nominated. This has made a lot of money, which is always a plus for Oscars.
No.
I don't know if it counts for costumes, but
no, I can't. I mean, maybe like original song, I guess.
Yes, original song. It better be getting nominated for it. We have one slot for the Taylor Swift
Toy Story
song.
Five.
One slot for Anne Hathaway in Mother Mary. One slot for for the Lady Gaga Devil Wears Prada 2 song. And then of course, Diane Warren one. So there's only one slot left, everybody. Work hard if you're going to try to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think this is making waves on a award season front.
Okay, well, whatever you say.
We'll see.
But okay, well, thanks everyone for listening, and go, you know, support local journalists. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back next week to discuss The Sheep Detectives, which I know you're all clamoring for. So we will be back then. Bye.